And Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent's craft.
And greetings and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Dish and Dirt. I'm your often irreverent and very opinionated but rarely wrong host, Gary Pickren, coming to you from Blair, Cato, Pickren, and Castellon in Columbia, South Carolina. This week is National State Planning Week, and before you go, ugh, and turn off this podcast, I recognize that no one ever wants to plan for that day, but at the same time, this is not only about you. And no, I'm not going to sit here and try to browbeat you into this because of your family. This is really about your clients. Now, today, clients look to you in the real estate business for all kind of information. They want you to provide the best name of the best plumber or electrician in town. They even want to know where the baseball and soccer programs are, or who the local dentist is, or who your doctor is. In short, you become an ambassador of the city, and that's how we grow our business, because you are the gatekeeper of this information. Now, estate planning is part of that, and in order to give your clients full service, you need to discuss with them their need to protect their financial estate. Remember, the house is typically the biggest financial purchase that they ever plan to make, and therefore they need to have financial planning in case something were to happen to them. So encouraging them to think about doing some estate planning only shows the true value and trust they have in using you. Today, I'm going to be joined by Blair Cato's own estate and trust planning attorney, Marshall Minton. Marshall has an LLM in taxation, which means that she crazily went to a fourth year of law school, and she also worked for the Department of Revenue in South Carolina, and she has been a lead attorney at a local bank's trust division. In short, she's really smart. She knows her stuff. But before she joins us, I do have a special segment called Say What.
Say What?
And Say What today, we're going to talk about an actual will. This is a real will. This isn't made up. When I was talking about this at a class, a real estate agent actually came up to me and said, yeah, I know that guy, and that's exactly who he is. So let me start by reading this quick provision in the will. In paragraph 5, it says, I do not intend to benefit any other person under my will except provided herein. However, to prevent challenges to my estate, I leave the sum of $1 to any person who demonstrates that he or she is the heir that I do not know of. Then it says in capital bold underlined letters, it is my specific intention not to leave, and I'll just call her Ashley Marie or John M., anything from my estate, and I specifically exclude them from the provisions of my last will and testament. They certainly know why, but to make sure it is clearly understood, my former son, John M., a.k.a. Lazy Fat Ass, never appreciated the first thing that I tried to do for him, lied on me, or at least exaggerated the true set of facts, tried to keep me in jail, engaged in a course of conduct against me that was worse than what any other human being ever engaged in against me. And Ashley Marie, you lied to me, withheld or outwith stole from me, tried to screw me over when I was sick or dying, and likewise never appreciated anything that I tried to do for her. I would suggest that both of these deadbeats get a job, a life, and stay away from or attend any funeral, gravesite, or memorial service for me, or and for that matter, to even be told where my remains are located, because I feel confident in the knowledge that one or both of these so-called people would somehow attempt to hurt me even in death. I would also take this opportunity to assure them that if there was any way possible, I will haunt them, curse them, and or be there to make sure that if I have any power to come back and to speak to them from the hereafter or do anything to terrify them, in capital letters, I will. And with that joyful will, let me go ahead and start with Marshall.
So she can talk about what not to put in a will, like that one.
All right, Marshall, so thank you very much for joining us today. Real excited to talk with you about estate planning, so thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
First question is, what is National Estate Planning Awareness Week?
All right, well, today starts the beginning of National Estate Planning Awareness Week. Congress declared National Estate Planning Awareness Week back in 2008 because they believe that estate planning is very important to Americans' financial wellness. Did you know that only 56% of Americans have an estate plan in place? And more than half of those have not updated their estate plan, so what they have in place probably isn't very good anymore.
Most lawyers don't even have estate planning, by the way, so it doesn't surprise me at all. So how does estate planning, what does it mean and what does it consist of? When we talk about an estate plan, what are we talking about?
So estate planning involves growing, conserving, and transferring your assets to your loved ones. You're creating a plan. You start with your goals, such as I want to make sure my family is protected. I don't want to pay the government any taxes. I don't want any creditors to come after my assets, or I want to leave a legacy by giving to charities. We start with those goals, and then we put a plan in place to accomplish those goals. Often those include documents such as a last will and testament, some form of trust, a health care power of attorney, a durable power of attorney, or a living will. In South Carolina, we call that a declaration for a desire for natural death, but living will is a lot easier to say.
So let's go ahead and kind of break down those documents. Tell me the difference, and what do we mean by will and trust, so that people listening will understand what is a trust, how does it work, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Why would I need a trust?
So a will, our first document, what we hear about often, that is how we manage and pass assets that we consider probate assets. The definition of a probate asset is anything you own that is not a non-probate asset, so a circular definition. But those are things such as your house. The biggest asset most people have is their house, or any other real property they own. Art collections, our jewelry, our bank accounts, all of those things are probate assets. And you use a will, last will and testament, to pass those to your loved ones. If you do not have a will, we do have what we call statutory intestacy, and the government tells you who gets your assets.
And that can be a big mess.
Yeah, nobody wants the government telling them what to do. So the will is the way that we are able to tell the courts, basically probate court, where we want our property to go to.
And we don't have to be rich to have a will then,
no,
because
you
I mean, you're talking
not.
Anything.
Anybody that has a person that they want their assets to go to needs a will.
Well, in real estate, we talk a lot about the deed. This a joint tenants would write a survivorship deed. And in this deed says that if I pass away, then the survivor, who is the co-owner of the property, they get the property. Would that not just take care of me getting a will? Why would I get a will? If that's the only asset I truly believe I have, why would I get a will?
Well, and you mentioned the joint tenants would write a survivorship. When it is titled that way, it is considered a non-probate asset until it is not a non-probate asset. And that is when both individuals that were the joint tenants have passed on.
So if my wife and I are joint tenants on our house and I pass away and she doesn't do any estate planning and then she passes away, now who knows where the property goes?
Well, the government will tell you that the property goes to young children. Children can't own property until they are of the age of 18. So what happens is we have to go to probate court. We get a conservator appointed and the probate court appoints that person. And then as soon as your child turns 18, they get that nice piece of property you just purchased.
Yeah, that happened to a friend of mine whose parents died when I was in high school. Her parents died, and at 18 years old, she inherited all the money, and it didn't last till she was 21, I don't think. So, yeah, that's a bad problem. So talk about trust.
Yeah, so a trust is where the grantor, the person that creates the trust, gives it to someone to manage for the benefit of someone else. Trusts are a great vehicle to use if you want privacy. Trusts are not filed with the probate court. All wills are filed with the probate court.
At death?
At death.
Okay, but not before death.
Not before death. Okay. Some states do file wills before death. South Carolina does not. So if you want privacy, a trust is a great way to do that, and that would be a living trust. There are also trusts created inside of a will. For example, if you did have those young children, you might put what we refer to as a testamentary trust in your will. And that is a way for to appoint someone as trustee to say, I want my children to be taken care of. Please use these funds for their health, education, and support. And then when they reach the age of 25, maybe let them have half of it. If they reach the age of 30, then they can get the full amount. You know, the testamentary trust is a great vehicle for
so that. It's a way for me to control my children from the grave.
Absolutely.
I like
to continue
that.
To control. We've had some situations where the age that the individual gets the money is age 55.
Wow.
So you can control them for a long time.
Well, I've always said that 18-year-olds, they have no clue. 21-year-olds, they probably have less clues than 18-year-olds because now they think they're adults and they don't really know. And I know at 25 years old, I barely had a clue. So I agree, you know, trying to keep large amounts of money going to children until they hit 25 or 30. And by the time they hit 30, I always figure if you hadn't figured it out by then, you might not ever, but it's a great way. So other than the privacy, as well as the ability to control or limit the child getting money, it's really not about control. It's about just limiting the money so they don't do dumb things. What other reasons might we have a trust?
The biggest one is anything that's in a trust is considered that non-probate asset. So we don't have to go to probate to administer it. So if you own property in North Carolina, say you've got a mountain house in North Carolina, you're going to want to put that in a trust because you don't want to have to do a probate both in North Carolina and South Carolina after you pass on.
Now, talk about the other documents in that package. So we talked about trust. We talked about wills. What's a health care power of attorney? What's the durable power of attorney? What's the living will?
Let's start with the durable power of attorney. This is a document that you appoint someone as your agent during your lifetime. And that this person can pretty much do anything and everything that you can do during your lifetime for you. So, for example, you are in a car accident and you have to go to rehab for 3 weeks to be able to walk again. And so you're in inpatient rehab, but you need to pay your bills. Your agent under your power of attorney can go to the bank and say, hey, I'm the agent of the power of attorney, and can get access to pay those bills for you.
So they can do basically anything financially you are able to do.
Yes.
So it's basically like the real estate power of attorney, but real estate power of attorneys we typically have are very much limited to just that particular transaction. So you have to be very careful who you name as a power of attorney.
Yes, they will have lots of control over your assets at that point in time. However, they are not valid at your death. So once someone dies, the power of attorney is not valid anymore. Additionally, an agent under a power of attorney is under the jurisdiction of the probate court. So if they do go beyond the scope of their duties and for your benefit, someone can take them to court.
And that's good to know, because a lot of people believe that the power of attorney is still valid after someone dies, and it is not. That's when you have to have the personal representative appointed by the court.
That's correct.
All right. How about the living will and the healthcare power of attorney?
So these documents are very similar in that they discuss what you want at the end of life. So end of life decisions. A living will is only end of life decisions. And you decide whether you want to have palliative care, feeding tubes, hydration to continue your life, or do you just want to be kept comfortable? And that is it.
There was a big case about that in the United States. I remember a couple of years ago where a young lady, the husband wanted to remove the life support, but the parents did not, or something of that nature.
Terry Schiavo case.
Yeah. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. So Terry Schiavo, she was in a coma and she did not have a living will. She did not have a health care power of attorney. And so her husband and her parents were fighting over whether to continue these life-sustaining treatments or to just let her pass and not have the feeding tube and the hydration provided. Poor Terry Schiavo was stuck in the middle, and she was prolonged for a long time. There was significant court costs. She left this legacy, and all of that could be avoided by just signing these simple documents.
So you can make decisions when you're competent and have the time and ability to really think this through, versus not having this and having family members fight over it. And I would imagine that the husband and the parents probably no longer have a relationship.
I'm sure they do.
That's not good. But the other thing is, a lot of people think when they sign this document that that's stuck forever. They can never change their mind. That's not true, is it?
You can always revoke a health care power of attorney, a living will, and a financial power of attorney at any point in time.
And you can literally revoke the living will while you're going into surgery. You can tell your doctor, I don't want the living will, and they can take steps to revoke it if you change your mind at that time. Mm-hmm. So on the health care power of attorney, why would I need a health care power of attorney? I'm married. If I go into the hospital and I cannot make my healthcare decisions, I assume my wife would make decisions, but how would that go about if my parents then came up and said, we disagree with my wife's decision?
Yeah, so that's exactly the Terry Schiavo situation. You need a healthcare power of attorney to appoint your wife as agent for you.
Even though I'm married.
Even though you're married, because under HIPAA, your wife doesn't have access to your healthcare information. So they need to know that she has HIPAA authorization. So a lot of our doctor's offices have those forms that you fill out before going in. But if you have not filled out that form, they cannot talk to your wife about it. They have the healthcare card.
So what would happen if let's say I had COVID, mm-hmm. and I was in the hospital on a ventilator and I could not make my own decisions, and I don't have a healthcare power of attorney? What's going to happen?
They are going to continue to keep you alive until the court step in.
And who's going to make decisions whether I get a certain type of treatment or not get a certain type of treatment? Let's say my wife wants me to get a particular treatment that's maybe a controversial treatment, but she thinks it might save my life. Who's going to make those decisions? My wife doesn't have a health care power of attorney for me, so is it just the doctors who are going to make the decision, the hospital administration?
The probate court will likely make that decision.
Wow. Instead of making my own decision. So a health care power of attorney would allow me to do that.
Yep.
today.
Yeah, so the healthcare power of attorney is similar to the living will, but it manages all medical decisions. So anytime you are incompetent and unable to make a decision, so you're in a coma, the agent under your healthcare power of attorney would make that decision for you.
So someone could appoint their spouse, their partner, their particular very close friend, and they can also name an alternate, correct?
Yes, you can name up to three alternates.
And they can also revoke that, change the name of the person who has the power and so forth anytime they want.
At any point in time.
Very easy to amend those. So it doesn't sound like estate planning is only for rich people.
It is not only for rich people. You know, back in the 90s, before the Bush tax cuts, you heard about people going to estate planning attorneys to avoid taxes. We had a very low estate tax exemption and gift tax exemption. And so often those rich people were coming to estate planning attorneys to avoid taxes. That is not the case these days. We are seeing more and more family dynamics is what is driving estate planning decisions. You know, the divorce rate is pretty high. We've got lots of blended, the modern family of stepchildren, half-children, adopted children. The planning needs for those are very great to make sure that you've got what you want put in place. We are also seeing more and more probate litigation because of these blended families. And unfortunately, the only people that get rich in probate litigation are the court costs and the attorney's fees.
Well, nobody cares about that avocado lamp until somebody dies.
Exactly.
And now we're going to spend $100,000 to fight over this stupid avocado lamp that grandmother offered us many times, but nobody wanted, but now it's the most prized possession grandmother has.
Yeah, and grandmother could have done a memorandum of personal property and put exactly who she wanted to have that avocado lamp, and we would not have spent that $100,000 in court costs.
I had that situation years ago where a lady was so worried her daughter-in-law was going to sell her Hummel collection. She revised her will like 5 and 6 times, and every time she would revise it, her son or daughter-in-law would see the will and then tell her to go back and redo it. And I finally told her, we're not doing it again for you. You make what you want to decide, and then don't tell them about it. Just don't tell them what's in the will at that point, and you decide. And that, I think this is a lot of what happens here. So we're not just talking about rich people. We're talking about everybody needs a will, because this, the comment I used to hear is, well, I'm going to be gone. What do I care? Well, what do you care is, like you said, if you have a blended family, you have kids together, you may have kids from a previous marriage that you don't share with your current spouse or partner. And so now how do you handle those situations? And particularly what we're seeing more in our society is older people getting remarried in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they already have grown kids. And so what do we do now when we're blending these two families together? And what we mean by blending it, maybe it's just a husband and wife coming together, but their children are gone and living in wholly separate parts of the country. So this would allow us to plan for that. If I pass away, then I don't want my new spouse to necessarily get the lake house we did bought together. Maybe I want my children to have that. And so I think that's a very important thing that we need to look about. How about with kids? I have somewhat young kids, 15, 13. Why is estate planning important if you have children? And what is the age that it quits being important? Or is there an age that quits being important?
I don't know that there's ever an age that having children is not important when it comes to planning. But it's more important when you have young kids, particularly for guardian appointment. A will is how you set forth your wishes as to who you would think would be best to take care of your children.
So it's not just your brother or sister that raises their hand first and says, I want to do it, and you're cringing, thinking that person would raise them.
Family court always decides who is in the best interest of the child and who's going to take care of them after both parents have passed. But the will, a provision in your will, tells the family court who you think is the best person for your child. And more often than not, they're always going to go to what the parents' wishes are.
So that's important. If I appoint a sibling and I don't update my will for years and I pass and my sibling is an alcoholic, the court's going to come in and look at that and decide, okay, at the time you decide to appoint your brother or sister, and they're now an alcoholic, it's not in the best interest of the child.
Yes, it's always first, best interest of the child is always first. If it's second, is who does the parent want? And there may be situations where you don't want that person that raised their hand first and says, you know, I'm in the best interest of the child.
And so when other things, so we're talking about a testamentary guardian to make sure we have the right person taking care of our children. We also have talked about making sure our child's not getting money at 18 years old.
Yes.
Or younger, you know, having to have guardian items and appointed for them and then having money. Once a child leaves our nest and they're grown and now we have two children that are outside of our nest,
it still allows us to state plan for those children.
Yeah, and at that point, it's also time to start having those children estate plan. So your child's 18 and they go off to college and you need to go fill out some medical forms for that child. Well, that child has not given you the health care power of attorney as a parent to handle their health care decisions.
Well, I think anybody who has kids in college know that that's a true thing, because the college, even though you're writing the check, will not even mail you the grades.
That is correct.
That's mind-blowing. Yes. I'm paying for it. I don't know what the heck's going on.
Or, you know, your child signs a lease and then they go off to Europe for a month and they need to pay their rent on their bills and you need to have access to their bank account to pay those bills for them.
That's very important. And I've started to see a lot more too when people are moving to South Carolina and ask them why they're moving here. They're saying, well, I have grandkids. And when we ask them about their estate planning, they're like, oh, well, you know, I left everything to my kids. One is a successful doctor. One's not so successful, hasn't really done much, and I'd rather just take care of that child. The doctor has hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars coming in, and so it allows you to make those decisions as a parent. Now, while we don't necessarily want to treat children different, sometimes there might be a need to. You might have one child that's grown special needs, and the other child is very financially well off, and this would allow you to continue to do things of that nature.
And I'm glad you mentioned special needs, because that is a very big reason to put a plan in place. We have seen so many situations where a child is getting Social Security benefits or Medicare or Medicaid benefits, and they inherit funds that knock them out of the ability to get those benefits.
Yeah.
And you want to have your planning in place to maybe set up a special needs trust for them so that they will continue to be able to receive those governmental benefits.
And lastly, as we talk about kids, I've had clients come in and say they want to change their estate planning from their kids getting to their grandkids getting, which also getting to the estate, which then brings in all the minor children inheriting money and having to set up trust. And matter of fact, just last week I had a client want to do that. And we said, well, you really need to put that in a trust and not just give money to young kids. And I think that's what they're going to do. How about people moving from, say, Ohio? I think half of Ohio now lives in South Carolina. They talk about calling it South Ohio. What about those people? They have estate planning already done. They spent money with their lawyers in Ohio. And now they move to South Carolina and plan to stay here. Do they need to redo their wills?
They definitely need to look at that. So probate laws are very state specific. Now, while the courts will recognize a will that was executed in another state, the laws associated with South Carolina don't always fit the laws of the state where the will was executed. For example, that could be a state that recognizes stepchildren in the definition of children. Well, South Carolina doesn't do that. So they moved to South Carolina and maybe they've just inadvertently disinherited their stepchildren by not updating their will.
I've actually seen that in a will case I had many years ago where the person intended to leave everything to their child. And their child was actually an adopted child, but the way the child was defined in the will did not include adopted child. It was blood. It was children of my blood or some weird legal phrase like that. And inadvertently, they left out their adopted child, which they had raised from a baby. Why not use these services? I know you can go online and get a will for $200.
Yeah, and you check these boxes, but you don't know what boxes to check. You don't know what box is going to and have your adopted child be the one that's going to inherit everything. And then there is no one there to guide you through what the laws are, to guide you of the pitfalls of picking one or the other. And then there is also no one there to make sure that you sign the documents correctly. I've seen so many power of attorneys come through that were not executed appropriately, and the financial institution just doesn't take them. And at that point in time, often it is too late to execute a new power of attorney, and you're pretty much out of luck or have to go get the court involved. And it is a long, expensive, timely process.
And I've seen that happen quite a bit where somebody who has an adopted child, let's say, is 25 years old and you've raised the child since the day they were born. To you, that's your child. You've adopted them from that day forward. You don't think of them as an adopted child. But under the law, if the language isn't proper in these wills, you use terms like a descendant of my or an issue of my blood. And now all of a sudden, it inadvertently has excluded somebody that did not, it was not your intention. That's a good reason not to use those services. We were saying with state, anybody's come here with a state needs to update those documents because our courts may not recognize it.
Right.
And you're right. I think doctor's offices, they kind of get nervous when all of a sudden they're presented a document from Ohio or California.
Yes, our medical professionals and hospitals are very used to the South Carolina health care power of attorney. And if they see any difference in it, they are hesitant to accept them.
Which is good reasons. They have tremendous liability if they do, and they're incorrect. How about veterans and service members? We have a lot of veterans come through our from our closing table. We love working with our veterans. We're big into the military in our firm, as you know. But a lot of times a veteran will be like, oh, we'll just go to the JAG office and get those done. Does that work for everybody who's a service member or not?
It does not always work. And I love and respect the JAG attorneys, but they are not trained in the estate planning realm. They do not have the experience needed to understand how to manage a complicated estate, whether it's a financial complication or if it's a blended family. They just aren't able to handle that. And so coming to someone who knows what they're doing is very important.
And do they do trusts over there?
They won't do trusts, no.
So if I was a service member and my spouse is a service member and she had children from a previous marriage and I had children from a previous marriage and now we have children together, is that the kind of estate planning they're going
to
deal with?
They're not going to be able to handle that situation.
They're not going to be able to do that. And if I had a child with special needs and I was in the military, they're not going to be able to handle that. So basically, they're there, and they do provide a tremendous valuable service, kids.
They're going to do it. And I love you, Will. My spouse gets everything, and that's about it.
Right. I do a lot of SRP briefings on USARA law, and there's usually a JAG officer beforehand. And what they talk about is you need to come see me if you don't have your will. I'll help you throw together a simple will. And they use that word simple quite often. All right, so as we finish up today, let's talk about two groups of people that we really want to work with in these closings. Real estate agents, why do they need to get this done?
A real estate agent has an asset and loved ones just like everybody else. And they are, a lot of them, unfortunately, are part of that 50% that do not have the estate planning that they need to have in place.
And their business is an asset, is it not?
It is absolutely an asset.
And how about their clients? Real estate agents are working with clients that are making the biggest financial decision of their entire lifetime. So why would it be to their interest to encourage their clients to work with a lawyer to get an estate plan done?
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this during Estate Plan Awareness Week, because we are coming here to talk to a large group of people that have their clients' ears about what is important with their assets and what is important with their community. And so I'm here to plead to those real estate professionals to talk to their clients, to make sure that their clients have an estate plan in place to help with their financial wellness. Having an estate plan in place helps them grow their wealth and to purchase more property with them. But, you know, your real estate professional's clients really look to the agent to tell them what they need to do. They put a lot of faith in what an agent tells them about their community, what they tell them about their house, what they can do with their house, what they can do with just their financial wellness.
And I think it's very important to understand that real estate attorneys don't typically understand estate planning. And that's one thing that's hard for us real estate attorneys to understand. Is a lot of us will try to sell an estate plan at the closing table because these two transactions kind of go hand in hand. But the reality of it is they really need to talk to somebody that is well-versed in estate planning.
Yes, that is exactly true. Well, you know, the one thing is I'm not going to be able to do your closing, just like you're not going to be able to do that trust. We need to work together to put a good plan in place for our clients.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for joining us, and I hope you'll come back and talk some more about estate planning.
Absolutely.
Wow, that was a lot of great information. And if anybody's interested in estate planning with Blair Cato, you can simply pick up the phone and call 803-400-8600 or email Marshall directly at marshall@blaircato.com. That's marshall@blaircato.com.
And now to Gary's Good News Only. The current 7-day moving average of daily cases decreased 12.5% last week. The 7-day average for positivity is now down to 5.7%. Hospitalizations are also down 8.8%. And deaths are even down 13.4%. In just the last 2 weeks of September alone, cases are down over 30%. And of course, our media still keeps lying and playing politics. No epidemiologist's suggestion that masking or mandates had anything to do with the crease. It was the variant working its way out. But that didn't stop the Washington Post from lying and saying that Texas and Florida were trying to block all efforts to stop and prevent the spread. Simply not true. Cases in those states followed the same trajectory as states with mandate and are now done with the Delta variant for the largest part. Florida has the same percentage of vaccinated people as Hawaii and Illinois lockdown crazed states. In fact, only 19 states have higher vaccinated rates. The media just needs to quit lying about these things. As of October 17, 189 million Americans are fully vaccinated, which is 57% of the entire population. And that's Gary's Good News All.
And that's all the time we have for our show this week. Hope everybody will come back and join us again next week. Please like us, share us, subscribe to us, and don't forget to pass the word around to all the real estate agents you know. Have a good weekend.